Welcome to the Condo on the Moon podcast. We are here for a very, very big episode of the show. In fact, perhaps the biggest episode of this show ever. And you know why, Chris Walder?
Why, James?
Because the champ is here!
The champ is here!
Not John Cena, though.
Not Cena?
No. Not that guy.
We got an even better champion.
We do! We have Adam Cole, the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, on the program. And I got a chance to talk with him for just a little under 40 minutes. And it's great chat talking about all that's going on with Ring of Honor and the best in the world. And before we get to that interview, I thought we would run down the card as it has been announced so far for Ring of Honor and then jump into our talk with Adam Cole. Well, it's actually my talk. He didn't talk to you.
What? He doesn't like me?
I don't know. Maybe. I told you, maybe we'll introduce you September 6th when ROH rolls back through Toronto.
Well, I hope that's the case.
I will introduce you. Adam is a lovely guy, and I'm sure he will be nice to you in any case.
I'm sure that'll be the case.
All right. Let's get to this card coming up for Best in the World. A lot of it has come out and been announced. We can now talk about it. Christopher Daniels will be bringing Frankie Kazarian, his tag team partner from TNA, to Ring of Honor, and they will be taking on Red Dragon for the ROH Tag Team Championships, and rumor has it, Tom Lawler from UFC might, in fact, show up again and be in the corner of Red Dragon, although that has yet to be confirmed.
Bad influence in ROH, I'm loving it.
Although they can't be called that.
Well, they can just go by their names. It's cool.
So they might get a new name for Ring of Honor, but everyone knows they are the Bad Influence, and they are coming for the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships at Best in the World, and it should be really fun. And Christopher Daniels, if you look on the ROH website, he's doing quite a number of shows for Ring of Honor. I don't know if that's the same case for Frankie Kazarian, but I would assume so. So it's not like this is going to be just a casual drop-in once-in-a-while thing for Christopher Daniels. He is back, it would seem, in full force in Ring of Honor.
Well, he's one of the pioneers of the company, so it's good to see him back home.
And Kevin Steen, of course, his match has been announced versus Silas Young. Many speculating that this will be, in fact, Kevin's last match in Ring of Honor. And the word on the street is Kevin will be reporting to Florida for NXT in August, along with Prince Devitt. And who's the other guy that's coming? I forget.
Off Kenta.
The top of my head. That's right, Kenta. They're all supposed to arrive there in August. That being said, Kevin Steen, his last match in ROH, potentially going to be emotional, going to be good. It should be something to see. To see Kevin Steen wrap up his time in Ring of Honor, if that is indeed the case. And I look forward to that.
I'm sure he'll get an appropriate send-off, a send-off worthy of someone who's been as important to Ring of Honor like Kevin Steen.
Indeed. Kevin has been one of the driving forces behind that promotion for many years now, and he does deserve all the praise and all the credit, and he actually gets some of that from Adam Cole in our interview coming up, so that'll be in mere moments. But we still have a few more matches to run through. The Briscoes will be taking on Michael Bennett along with Matthew Hardy in a tag team match. That should be interesting, seeing as Matthew Hardy has desecrated the belt that Jay Briscoe once had. And I met Jay Briscoe. Nice guy.
Surprisingly enough, looks can be deceiving sometimes. He's got the big grizzly beard, but he has a gentle heart.
Well, I don't know about that. If you saw the training videos ROH put out, that
yeah,
might not
did,
be
yeah.
true. But Michael Bennett and Matt Hardy, they are in for it, and Maria Kanellis will be along for that ride. I would be most certain of if Michael Bennett is there. You can bet Maria will not be far behind. The ROH television title, our guest from last week, Matthew Taven, said he would get his hands on Truth Martini. He will indeed have that chance as he takes on Jay Lethal for the ROH Television Championship. Truth Martini will be handcuffed at ringside, so there will be no funny business during this match, at least in theory, as Matt Taven gets a chance to get back what he once held, the ROH Television title against Jay Lethal, who is the only man on earth that I will say may in fact do a better Randy Savage impression than me.
I don't know about that, James. You're at the top of your game when it comes to Savage impressions.
I want to throw it out there. If someone can let Jay Lethal know, I welcome him to come on this program, and you know, he can have it out with me. We'll do the Randy Savage voice off on this very program. So the challenge is out there.
I smell ratings, man. I smell ratings.
So let Jay Lethal know. I might even let him know, and we'll try and get him on the program. He's not booked or anything. We're not pre-selling anything, so don't think that. But one day we'd love to have it happen here and throw it down. So the challenge has been laid out there.
But until he comes on the podcast, we got a poll for our former Condo on the Moon guest, Taven, in the television title match.
Yes, indeed. Matt Taven, a great guy, and he is rooting for ACH's Spurs, and they got the win in the NBA Finals last night. They're up 1-0. So for all you crossover fans that have come from my work in basketball, there's your little NBA bit for the week. Another match that should be interesting, a long-standing feud that has been going on in ROH, Roderick Strong. Is he the leader of the decade? I don't know. I guess he is. He takes on Cedric Alexander, who is looking for revenge, despite the fact that he won his match at the card in Toronto. War of the Worlds was New York, sorry. Global Wars in Toronto. He won his match, but the decade laid him out on chairs, and he looks for revenge in a submission match versus Roderick Strong. Should be good. It smells like the end of a feud here. We'll see if it ends up being that.
Revenge is even sweeter when you can beat a guy twice in a row. Submission match, Alexander Strong should be good.
And, of course, our guest, the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, Adam Cole, will be taking on Canada's and Toronto's own Michael Elgin for the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship. The first time since these two have met in the finals where they're going to get it on one-on-one. Should be interesting. Michael Elgin is just one beastly man, and I'm very scared based on my interview if Michael Elgin hears it, because I did not pick him to win this match.
But you got to go with the champ in this case.
Indeed, because the champ is on our show, and we're excited about it. Adam Cole sits down with me and talks about not just Ring of Honor, but also his work in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, where he is a big part of that promotion, along with Kevin Steen and the Young Bucks, as they make up Mount Rushmore. We talk about PWG, ROH, and even a little bit of talk about how Adam has had his opportunities to try out with WWE and what he learned or did not learn from that experience. So all of that and a whole lot more coming up in mere moments. Chris Walder, are you ready to hear the champ?
Oh, I'm ready, man. Biggest interview in the history of Condo on the Moon.
Welcome. It is Savage Condo on the Moon, and we are talking with, no doubt about it, our biggest guest ever. He is the champion of Ring of Honor, and one of my personal favorites. He is Adam Cole.
Hello, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, and, you know, it is a pleasure to have you on the line with us and talking with us, and I had talked with Matt Taven, and he was talking about what a big thing this is for ROH to be heading to pay-per-view, and just the vibe in the entire company and the entire locker room. Obviously, heading to pay-per-view June 22nd, we'll get out of the way right off the top. This is a huge moment for ROH and for the locker room and everybody involved, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I think, actually, 2014 has been the biggest year to date for ROH, and we're not even halfway through the year. I mean, with the combination of guys like Chris Hero and AJ Styles coming back, and then obviously at the pay-per-view we have Christopher Daniels returning, you know, our relationship with New Japan, and now going to live pay-per-view, I mean, it couldn't get any better for Ring of Honor. We've been on quite a roll. This pay-per-view is just continuing that roll, and it's actually perfect timing, too, you know, with the WWE now going to the WWE Network. You know, Ring of Honor is going to capture kind of that untapped market now of live pay-per-view. So hopefully we'll get a lot of viewers. Certainly our guys are ready to impress, and it's going to be a really, really exciting June 22nd.
And for you as the champion and all of that, do you feel any added pressure with this being on your shoulders, or is it a team effort and you feel that, you know, everyone's doing their part and you're just doing yours?
Well, Ring of Honor has always been based on being a team, and I think that's why our company's been so successful. In many cases, if we're looking very big scale here, Ring of Honor's kind of the little engine that could. You know, it's a bunch of young, hungry athletes who believe in Ring of Honor, believe in the product. Our fans feel the exact same way. So it's very much a team effort. But as the champion, of course, there's a little bit of added pressure to deliver because you're the guy who's the face of the company. You're at the head of the ship. So going into this pay-per-view, there will be a lot of pressure. But there's a lot of pressure on me all the time, and I welcome that. That's something that comes with being the champion. And to me, it's one of the perks because I feel that I do best under pressure, and June 22nd on that pay-per-view will be no different.
And you're set to face Michael Elgin, who is a guy who, my God, he is a beastly man. There is no two ways about it. I was talking with someone about him, and I was saying just what he can do in a weight room must be something to see. And you can compare him probably with anyone in wrestling in terms of his strength and what he can do in a gym, I would imagine.
Yeah, Michael Elgin is the strongest guy that I've ever been in the ring with, for sure. I mean, there are times where he throws me around like a rag doll, and there's absolutely nothing that I can do about it. So Michael Elgin's strength. But something that a lot of people seem to forget is his agility. You know, he's quick. He's such a hybrid athlete, which is why he's so impressive and why the Ring of Honor fan base has fallen in love with him. But I think that's why this Best in the World pay-per-view is so exciting, is because I think at this point in time, me and Michael Elgin are labeled as the number one and number two guys in the company. Currently, right now, I'm number one because I'm the Ring of Honor World Champion. Michael Elgin feels that he wants to be number one, and in order for him to do that, he has to beat me for the Ring of Honor World title. So it's going to be a battle in Nashville.
And a fitting title for the pay-per-view, Best in the World.
Absolutely.
One of the things, too, about Michael Elgin, I was at, as you know, I was at the Global Wars show in Toronto, and I got a chance to talk with you prior to that show, and we'll get into your match at Global Wars a little later on. But the next day, there was a house show, or a independent show in Hamilton by Alpha One, and Kevin Steen was on that show, but also Michael Elgin was on that show, and you got to see a different side of Michael Elgin that you don't get to see in ROH. He did a match, and you saw just some ability to talk and put on a comedic performance that was really great. It was a match he was in there with. He was supposed to originally fight Silesia Sparks, and it turned out he ended up fighting a mixed tag against his wife and Jimmy Jacobs, and it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, Michael Elgin's a really well-rounded guy. He's certainly one of those guys that can do it all, like I said, which is why he's a big part of the Ring of Honor roster and why he's been so successful.
And he wrestles in a place where a lot of the guys from ROH wrestle, in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, and you just recently lost your title in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, but you're the longest reigning.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, so that is sad because, I mean, you're the longest reigning champion there, though.
Yes, correct.
But compare the differences between that promotion and ROH, because I think there are significant differences, and it's the one thing with PWG being located in California, I can't get out to that place, but it seems like this magical Disneyland that I just want to go to.
Well, for as many similarities as there are with PWG and Ring of Honor, like you had said, there are many, many differences as well, and I think the best way to describe PWG is PWG is fun. And I know this is cliche, but it's so, so true for PWG. Those fans in Reseda are just as much a part of the show as the wrestlers are. I mean, they're the most rabid, they're the most wild fans that you could ever perform in front of, and you get a rare chance to have a lot of freedom to be able to go out there and do whatever you want to do, have whatever kind of match that you want to have, because Ring of Honor is a television product now. So obviously we have time constraints and there are storylines that we must follow. But in PWG, it's kind of a no man's land where the wrestlers just get to show their talents in any way that they would like to. And you also get a combination, too, of Ring of Honor guys, wrestling guys from Dragon Gate USA and vice versa. So it's a really fun, cool environment for a really diehard wrestling fan to check out. So for anyone listening who has not picked up a PWG DVD yet, I highly suggest you do, because I promise you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, it's great fun, and it almost has the feel of, in pro sports, it's almost like an all-star of the indies feel to it, because you see so many guys from so many different places, and really, when you watch a PWG show, you get a little bit of everything.
Right, exactly. You know, you get great comedy, great hard-hitting wrestling, the most amazing high flyers in the world, and the fans just completely eating it up, man. It's an absolute blast. Every single time a PWG show ends, I can't wait until the next one rolls around.
And when you're in PWG, you are part of Mount Rushmore with Kevin Steen and the Young Bucks, and the four of you guys, you talked about how fun it is. When you four guys are out there, it becomes real fun. It almost has a vibe like D-Generation X to a degree. It kind of has that kind of feel to it. Not that I necessarily think it all lines up where I could say, well, you're Triple H and Kevin Steen is this guy, but it has that same kind of feel and that same kind of fun to it.
Sure. Well, I think the thing is, you know, me, Steen, and the Bucks are so passionate about PWG, and, you know, we love PWG so much. And then on top of that, in real life, we're all, like, really, really close friends. So what you see on screen oftentimes is very real. It's me, the Bucks, and Kevin Steen just going out there and having a blast.
And I had heard you talking before about your relationship with Kevin and with the Young Bucks, with Nick and Matt, and you said you've learned a lot from those three guys. Maybe expand upon that for people who haven't heard interviews where you've talked about that, and just talk about how they've helped you not only personally but professionally.
Sure. Well, I think the biggest thing for me with those three guys is those three guys gave me so much opportunity. Early on in my career, I was a very self-conscious guy. Like, I didn't really believe in my abilities, which is the case with a lot of wrestlers. In many cases, we're our own worst critics. And, initially, me and Kyle O'Reilly, when we teamed as Future Shock, we wrestled the Young Bucks in the Hammerstein Ballroom in a pre-show for Best in the World, I want to say 2011. It was a little six-minute match, and it was an absolute blast. We loved wrestling the Bucks. And I remember the Bucks came to the back, and they said, hey, do you guys want to come out to PWG and do this again? And we said, yeah, absolutely. So the Young Bucks got our foot in the door at Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. And then once we got our foot in the door, I started doing a little bit of a heel run in PWG, and Kevin Steen had seen it, and Kevin really believed in the character. He really believed in my abilities. So he was a big part in me becoming a main event player at PWG because Kevin believed in me so much. So working with those guys, having those guys put that faith in me really gave me the confidence that I needed to perform at that main event level. So I owe a lot to those guys.
Yeah, and you've done all kinds of crazy things out there. One of the matches just recently, you faced Candice LeRae in a match, and that was that was the most tremendous thing I have ever seen. It was a blast, and it was funny, and it was entertaining, and that's the one thing with PWG. If you buy into it, you really just can't be nothing but entertained.
Sure. You know, I'll tell you, when El Generico was in PWG, I think what worked so well for him as a performer. I mean, there are multiple things I could get into about how, you know, why great he is. But one of the biggest things is he played the ultimate underdog so, so well. And it does not get any more underdog than Candice LeRae. I mean, the girl's 100 pounds soaking wet. But she can do amazing things in the ring, and that Reseda crowd has just latched onto her and completely believe in her and get behind her. So when I get the chance to get in there with Candice, it was so much fun because, one, it was something different. Something that you're rarely going to get to see on any other wrestling card. And like I said, it was the ultimate villain against the ultimate underdog, so it was a blast.
And that's one of those things, too, you mentioned about ROH being a television product. Probably not something that you can put on television these days.
Right, of course. And even then, too, for me, creatively as a performer, it kind of gave me the chance to have a different kind of matchup. Because lots of times, especially on high-level independent wrestling organizations, it's a lot of toe-to-toe, it's a lot of back and forth, it's a lot of false finishes, things of that nature. But when you're wrestling a female, especially one the size of Candice LeRae, you have to be more creative in the way that you go about your match structure and the way that you tell your story. So for me, that was a fun challenge, and I really enjoyed it.
And then switching gears back to ROH, you hold that ROH title. Obviously, when you look back at the history of that title, it reads like a who's who of guys who have gone on to bigger and better things. And how do you look at that history and how it relates to yourself?
Well, it's very humbling, you know, because I was a giant fan of Ring of Honor when I was in middle school and high school. You know, I used to watch guys like CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and Nigel McGuinness and Tyler Black and Samoa Joe, and I would just be in awe of these guys. And I remember going to Ring of Honor shows and being so excited to be there with the crowd interaction and just the match quality that these guys put on, and was just absolutely wowed and blown away. So for me now to fall into that same category as these gentlemen who have held this championship is a huge honor. Obviously there's a lot of big shoes for me to fill, but like I said, it's a job that I'm willing to put the work into, and it's been a lot of fun.
And in every interview I've ever heard, you are just the nicest guy in the world. You are very generous with your time. You answer every question that's posed to you. And then you play this heel role. Where does that come from you? Because it doesn't seem like it's part of your personality.
Well, I think that's why I enjoy playing the bad guy heel Adam Cole that I do. Because for that 20 minutes when that camera's on and the lights are on and I'm in that ring, I get to play somebody who is completely different. And it's a lot of fun for me. I think, too, the idea of controlling an audience as a heel is a lot more fun and a lot more entertaining. Like knowing, working with a babyface and seeing what the crowd wants and seeing when the crowd wants to get really, really excited, and then me as bad guy Adam Cole taking that away from them. It's just a really, really fun ride to go on. You know, it's similar to a movie or similar to live theater. It's just an enjoyable process of our job where I get to go out there and pretend to be this big jerk, man. I really enjoy it.
And one of the things, you got that title through going through a tournament, and I thought the evolution to becoming that character was very subtle, and it just came in little bits and pieces. And we hear so often how wrestling fans aren't willing to wait for stuff and have a build to things, but I thought the build to that was very subtle, very brilliant, and people were ready for it when that moment hit, when you won that title and you took that title and smashed it across Jay Briscoe's head.
Right. Actually, that's why I enjoyed the character development of the heel turn for the Adam Cole character. Because, you know, traditionally, it's been done time and time again. Good guy is good guy forever, and then in the span of, one night, good guy becomes bad guy. And that's very easy booking to do. But for me, creatively, it gave me so much more for me to dig my teeth into when I knew that it was going to be this slow transition and the slow build. I mean, as a matter of fact, the Adam Cole character is evolving right now. You know, it's constant evolution within my character, which, like I said, makes things different and makes things fun, both for the guys that I get in there with and for myself, you know, whether it be my promo style or the way that I wrestle my matches. It's been fun. And like I said, it gives me a whole range of emotions to play with. And that's the best part of wrestling. And that's really all wrestling is. It's just playing with emotions.
And part of that evolution and that growth of that character is you have built your own little stable around you in ROH as well. You have Matt Hardy now as your guiding light or force that is driving you to success. And then recently, you've also added Michael Bennett and Maria Kanellis to that group. Compare the two groups, because you have the group in PWG with Kevin and the Young Bucks, and now you have this group in ROH. What are the similarities and what are the differences between the two?
Well, the biggest similarity is obviously is we're a bunch of jerks who do what we want and say what we want. but as far as the differences go, like in PWG, Mount Rushmore, to me, it's four of the top guys saying that we run PWG and nobody can touch us. That's the biggest difference. Whereas in Ring of Honor, kind of like what you had said, I've built this empire around myself or this kingdom where Matt Hardy being my mentor, Michael Bennett being alongside me, as well as Maria Kanellis, and were protecting me as the Ring of Honor World Champion and making sure that I stay the Ring of Honor World Champion, because we in our hearts believe that that's what's, for lack of a better term, best for business for Ring of Honor. So I'd say that those are the biggest differences between my faction in ROH and my faction in PWG.
I've heard that somewhere before. Anyway, let's talk about some of your matches within this run as champion. The one that stands out, and it was a different match from what I've seen from you, the match you had down in New Orleans for WrestleMania weekend down there, where ROH was present with your Card of Honor. You finally put to bed this rivalry with Jay Briscoe, and that ladder war match, I had seen the match between Kevin Steen and El Generico, and boy oh boy, that kind of established quite a ladder to climb. But I thought what you guys did with yourself and Jay Briscoe lived up to the reputation of that match, and for ROH, that kind of is a match that, for like in WWE, you have a TLC match. Ladder War is kind of ROH's answer to that, and I thought you lived up to the legacy of that match fairly well.
Oh yeah, that one was a wild one. You know, me and Jay Briscoe certainly were feeling the effects of that match for weeks to come. It was absolutely brutal, probably one of the most brutal matches that I was ever a part of. But that was the culmination of everything we had worked towards, you know, up until starting with the end of Death Before Dishonor, where I super kicked Jay Briscoe in the back of the head, leading up to New Orleans with my world championship and Jay Briscoe's world championship hanging up above the ring to finally decide who the unified Ring of Honor world champion was. So we brought out all the big guns, man, and both he and I paid for it, but fortunately for me, I walked away as the winner.
And, you know, it was a match that, it was a nice match. It's not a match that I would recommend you do very often, but it's one of those...
No, me either.
But it's one of those matches where, you know, you have to have one of those every once in a while to kind of earn the respect of wrestling fans, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure. No, I know exactly what you mean. And with a stipulation like Ladder War, and more importantly, like you had mentioned, with the reputation that had preceded Ladder War, you know, I knew going in that this was going to be a fight, and that my body was going to hurt, and it was going to be painful, and it was not going to be fun. But that was part of the deal, and I felt like no other match would have culminated the feud to me and Jay Briscoe other than Ladder War, so I was ready for it.
But for the most part, when you look at how you wrestle, you're a young guy, but you wrestle almost a very classical kind of wrestling style, and in different interviews I've heard from you, you're really becoming that student of the game, and you watch a lot of different things, and it's really a style that I think a lot of wrestlers should adapt to, because you want to have longevity in this, and you want to have a long career, and if you wrestle a certain way, you can't do those matches you had with Jay Briscoe every night, or you're not going to have a long career.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's very important, too. I look at wrestling as a never-ending book with constant chapters in between. And that by no means means that I'm being lazy on certain matches. Every single time I step through the curtain, I give you 100% of my efforts. But if I were to go out and have, let's say, an Adam Cole, Jay Briscoe, Ladder War style match every single weekend that I perform, number one, I would have a 5-year career. Number two, it wouldn't be special anymore. So it's very important. It's like a movie. If a movie starts with an incredible action scene and you are absolutely blown away, but the movie's 2 hours, by the hour point, you're like, okay, we've kind of seen it all. You know, I think it's very important to tell your stories in different ways, whether that be with facial expressions, whether that be with body language, whether that be with promos, the way that you carry yourself, the way that you act. This is all, like I said, a never-ending story. It's a marathon. And as long as the people are entertained and they're paying attention to what you're doing and they're continuing to buy the DVDs or the iPay-per-views or showing up to Ring of Honor events, then that's all that matters.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, you've had a tryout with WWE and been down to the Performance Center, and I was listening earlier today, Triple H was talking about their NXT event coming up, and he made this analogy about playbooks with sports teams and how the WWE has their playbook, and other places have their playbook. In those experiences you've had with going down to try out for WWE and working with them, do you understand what that playbook or that elusive WWE style is now?
No, I'm not too sure on the WWE style because I've never really worked within the system. But I will say this, you know, because a lot of people have said the same thing, like there's a Ring of Honor style or there's a PWG style or there's a WWE style. To me, there's only one style, and that's the style that works. That's the style that the people invest money into. That's the style that people are emotionally invested into. So regardless of the way that the WWE goes about things or the way that Ring of Honor goes about things, if the companies are succeeding and the companies are growing, that's the right style, and that's the right way to go about it.
And one thing, though, too, when I look at the ROH wrestlers that have had success and moved on to the WWE, the one thing that they seem to have in common, and I see it in you, and I see it in a guy like Kevin Steen and a few other guys in ROH, it's that ability to connect with an audience and a wrestling crowd. And Ring of Honor is noted for having a wrestling crowd that they're pretty demanding in what they expect of the people performing. And you guys seem to get it and seem to know how to relate to that crowd and read it and do a very good job at it.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's something, like I said, that just takes a lot of time. You know, it's very important to know your audience in and out, which is so great, actually, about being on later in the card now, because for me, I can watch the first few matches and kind of see how the audience is responding to what things. You know, at this point now, I'm very familiar with, like, say, cities like New York, Chicago, or Toronto. I kind of have a general idea of what this audience is looking for. But say that we go down south to, like, North Carolina or West Virginia or Virginia, I know that their style or what they expect will be a little bit different, too. So it's just one of those things that kind of comes with time and being able to know your audience and kind of give that audience what they want, because not every audience wants the same thing.
And you mentioned Toronto. I was at the show Global Wars, as we mentioned earlier. Your match with Kevin Steen was one of the things that just blew me away. That was one of those rare moments in a time in wrestling where it's so hard to get a dynamic where you have 100% of people rooting for that baby face and 100% people booing the bad guy. Boy, oh boy, did that happen in Toronto. I mean, Kevin Steen came out to that ring and the place exploded.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of those things that I've tried to pride myself on as this heel character in Ring of Honor. Because kind of to backtrack a little bit, I started my career off in CZW when I was a heel there. And this is when I was learning how to be a heel. And I was oftentimes the audience would be split. You know, some of the audience would like me and some of the audience would hate me. And I knew because Ring of Honor is such a hardcore fan base. When I first turned heel, the crowd was very excited because they were very entertained by my heel work and other companies. So I looked at this as a goal and I said, okay, what can I do with my style or what can I change about myself to make sure that every single person in that building and every single person on the internet wants me to lose the championship and wants the babyface that's wrestling me to just kick my butt. So in you know, these past two weekends, myself against Kevin Steen, myself against Jushin Thunder Liger, both of those scenarios were exactly what I wanted. If you can ever get to that point where the building 100% of it is behind the good guy and with 100% is against the bad guy, that's the magic of pro wrestling, and that's exactly what we want. So yeah, that was an absolute blast for me to wrestle Kevin in Toronto and have the audience be as invested as they were.
And two very different matches in many senses. I mean, you had Kevin, who anytime Kevin comes up to Canada, whoever is against him is in trouble, because the one thing about Canada that we have learned with wrestling is it doesn't matter what you tell us. When we have a guy who's Canadian that we like, he's going to be the baby face regardless of if you make him that or not. And it just creates a environment that just creates just pandemonium and craziness. And then you're wrestling a lot of Canadians lately. You do like us, right? Because, I mean, you fought Kyle O'Reilly, Canadian, Kevin Steen, Canadian, now Michael Elgin, Canadian. You do like Canada, right?
Oh, of course. I love Canada. You know, they know that I'm doing my job to get them to hate me. I tell people this all the time. When I'm getting booed, it feels like cheers. Because as a bad guy, that's your exact role. I love coming up to Canada because the Canadian fans are so passionate. They're so invested in Ring of Honor. Toronto is one of my absolute favorite cities to perform in front of.
Yeah, and then you guys are going to be back there September the 6th, and you're going to the old Maple Leaf Garden site, which is a little bit bigger venue, and I've been there covering basketball. I'm really excited to see how that plays out for ROH being in that arena. You guys had done that arena once before, but I didn't get the chance to get down for that, but I'm excited to see you guys coming back there for that.
Yeah, you know, us as well. Like I said, anytime we come to Toronto in any sort of capacity, it'll be great. Getting to go to the Maple Leaf Gardens again should be awesome. Hopefully we'll bring even more people next time based on the show that we had joint with New Japan. It should be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I don't know what they call it now. They have a name for it now, but I don't remember. But everyone knows it as the old Maple Leaf Gardens, just like they call it the Rogers Center now. It's Skydome for
gotcha,
everybody.
Gotcha.
It's one of those things. But as you look ahead to things for yourself with this matchup with Michael Elgin and just the whole build towards this, you've been getting to do a lot of media. You've been getting to get out there and promote this, and just the general feeling you have heading towards this.
Very excited. Like I said, this is the first time ever that Ring of Honor is doing live pay-per-view. So this is big. This is a really, really big step forward for Ring of Honor. I think the people are very excited about it, considering we're coming off these two very successful joint New Japan and Ring of Honor events. Nashville is a great city. At the beginning of the year, we did an event television taping there in Nashville, and the crowd was fantastic. I know that Nashville is very excited to be getting the first ever live Ring of Honor pay-per-view. So this is big. We're really, really excited, and we will deliver. We will deliver.
And one of the buzzes about all that's gone on for ROH, there's been a lot of positive buzz about ROH, and this debate has started among people on the internet about if ROH is now approaching the position of being the number two company, how aware and how much does that mean to you or matter to you?
For me, and I don't want to speak for a majority of the guys on the roster, but we're not really focused on what anybody else is doing. And I think that's been part of the big reason that we've been successful this year. We kind of are putting our heads down and just sprinting forward, man. Like I said, we're focused on making Ring of Honor the best product that we can, showing as many new people and exposing as many new people to Ring of Honor as we can, and constantly trying to grow as a company. Like I said, we got a group of really young, hungry guys who are more motivated than ever to make this product the best it possibly can be, and obviously doing all that we can to reach as many people as we can. So who knows what will eventually happen with ROH. All I can say is if it continues to grow like it's grown this far, there's some really, really big things in store for us.
And you've had all these great people coming on board. I mean, you mentioned Chris Hero showed up at Final Battle, and that didn't work out so well for you. Then you had obviously AJ Styles became part of Ring of Honor, and now Christopher Daniels is coming. And by the time people hear this interview, it'll be someone else is coming with him that we can't talk about right now. But by the time this airs, everyone will know who's coming with Christopher Daniels. But just adding all those big names, it just adds to the mix, doesn't it? And I was talking with Matt Taven, and he said it gets everyone fired up, and it kind of brings that level of competition up to another notch and another level.
Of course, yeah, because like I said, when you have a lot of young, hungry guys, but then you also have these established veterans who have been wrestling for years and wrestled all over the world and wrestled on television, I mean, everywhere that you can name. When we can add these guys on board to Ring of Honor, and more importantly, when they're excited to come to Ring of Honor, you can't ask for a better situation. You know, the fans are excited. These guys coming in are excited. And it does nothing but makes our product better.
And one last thing. You have been a frequent guest on Kevin Steen's Weekend Escapades. You've been part of that. And one of the things that took me back, on one of the Weekend Escapades, you and Kevin actually went to the Royal Rumble together.
yeah That was actually after a Ring of Honor event in Pittsburgh. And Kevin had never been to the Rumble. Kevin got some tickets from a buddy of ours within the WWE. And he asked if I wanted to go. And I said, yeah, sure, sure. So me and Kevin made a little weekend out of it. We got to go see some of our buddies wrestle for the first time at the Royal Rumble, which was so, so cool for us because a lot of us are very close within this wrestling circle. So that's just the case of a couple of guys supporting their friends, getting to see them get what they deserve and perform on such a large stage. So it was really cool to be there live and see it.
And that ended up being a crowd that was absolutely crazy in many ways that you were a part of.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. They were. They certainly wanted to see Daniel Bryan, that's for sure.
They did indeed. And, of course, many people want to see Adam Cole facing Michael Elgin on June the 22nd. And even though you're fighting a Canadian and it goes against my country, I don't want to see you lose. And I feel like a traitor to my nation to say that. But I really want this to keep rolling for you because it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I appreciate your courage for going against your country. That's admirable of you.
Well, you know, what can I do? I don't like hockey either, and I'm Canadian, so I'm kind of weird like that.
Oh, boy, that's two strikes for you.
I know. It's terrible, isn't it? I live in a nation of hockey-dwelling people, and I could care less about it. I don't know. It just doesn't work out for me. But, no, it's looking like things are going really well for Ring of Honor, and you are a big part of that. And just lastly, with your role as champion, how much input do you have in everything that's going on? Are you made aware of things, and is your opinion part of that, or do you just go with the flow and you know, whatever they want you to do, you're doing?
I mean, for me, I've always been kind of like a workhorse, and what I mean by that is I do what my boss tells me to do, because at the end of the day, he's the guy in charge. I'm the talent, you know, so I always try to do and deliver under any circumstance of what I'm told to do. I mean, do I have input? Yeah, of course. You know, I have good relationships with a lot of the guys on the booking team, a lot of the guys in the office. So if there are things or ideas that I have, I'm never afraid to throw them out there. But at the end of the day, like I said, I'm a guy that likes to show up to work and do what he's told and just deliver to the best of my abilities, to the best of their beliefs or their ideas, and give the fans what they want in the process.
And I lied. One last thing. Court Bauer has been a part of things with ROH, and he's been talking about this pay-per-view and getting those things about ROH from the technical standpoint and the setting and all the television aspects and upgrading them as a talent. Is that something that excites you? Because at the end of the day, you guys have no control over that, but if you're putting on a great show and they can
extenuate, that
would be correct. You see, that's why the champion, and make the product look and feel better. That obviously is a plus.
Sure, sure, yeah, yeah. Court Bauer has done a tremendous job since he's come on board with media, with getting our names out there, and that's what we need. Because the bottom line is, you can have the greatest product in the world, but if nobody sees it, that really hurts what we're trying to do. And Court Bauer has done a very, very good job, like I said, of hustling as hard as he can to make sure as many people have their eyes on Ring of Honor. And the more people that have their eyes on Ring of Honor, the more people that walk away not disappointed and want to buy a ticket or buy an iPay-per-view, the better that is for everybody.
Yeah, and it's a great thing, because the fact that you guys are, it really seems like you're drawing in new people to the product, and that's one thing that you always have to be growing, because if you're not growing, you know, you're not getting anywhere. And one of the things, the person who I do this podcast with, when we started this podcast, I got talking a lot about ROH, and now he's excited to the point that when Ring of Honor comes back to Toronto, he wants to go with me now to go to the Ring of Honor show in Toronto. So one person at a time, we're converting people.
Absolutely. It's that slow and steady process, because when you go in guns blazing and throw everything you possibly can on the table, the risk is much higher than the reward in those cases. And for Ring of Honor, we're not in a situation where we can do that. But instead, us going slow and steady and slowly exposing people to ROH, whether that be with our new pay-per-view coming out, whether that be through social media, yeah, heck, even more important, through word of mouth. Anytime people check it out, they seem very seldom to be disappointed. And I think we have the right business model in that. So as long as our guys keep working hard and we expose more and more people to our product, we'll continue to grow just like we are this year.
And so, one last thing popped in my head. When you were on with Mike and Maria, you said something that I found very poignant when you were talking about you've got to the point where you said you were studying people and not just like wrestling. You were studying like actual people and their emotions and things. And it brought me back to a story that involves Stone Cold Steve Austin, because Stone Cold Steve Austin was talking about how the Stone Cold character developed, and he based that character off watching this series about a serial killer, and kind of that was what jarred him into thinking of the Stone Cold character. I thought that was like next level thinking on your part, and like getting to another level for you as a performer.
Oh, thank you. For me, like I said, of course, I study and I watch tons of wrestling. I mean, I cannot tell you the countless hours of wrestling that I've watched and still do watch. But for me, like I said, when you get to that main event level, and professional wrestling being about emotion, and the guys who have really drawn money in wrestling are the ones that can connect with an audience. So for me, like I said, with this heel character that I've been playing, my father used to make me watch James Bond movies all the time when I was a kid. So I still have a love or a soft spot in my heart for James Bond movies, and I'll be flicking through the channels sometimes, and a James Bond movie will come on, and I'll see these James Bond villains and the way that they carry themselves with such arrogance and such confidence, and they never raise their voice. And I mean, it's so irritating with how much arrogance literally oozes through their bodies, because they believe in themselves so much and they really feel that they can do no wrong. And I said, okay, that's what I want to portray, and that's what I want to come across as. Or seeing guys, it's amazing too, the difference in dressing up. You know, since I've been world champion, now I wear suits everywhere to the airport, and you know, when I show up at the events, and people literally look at you and treat you differently based on the way you're dressed. It's just it's a weird human society thing, a weird different emotions that we can play on. So for me, I pay attention to all those little details. It's like if you hear a quote in a movie, I'll jot it down in my notebook. All things like that, like constantly 24/7 thinking about wrestling, thinking about playing with emotions, and thinking about growing as a performer.
And then lastly, was it sadder to lose the PWG championship or to learn that Ronda Rousey now apparently has a boyfriend?
Oh, I didn't even know that Ronda had a boyfriend.
Yes.
Oh, now I'm just crushed on the air. What a mean thing that you just did.
I didn't mean to be mean, but I know this has been a goal for you, and I've been rooting for you.
I know. I appreciate it.
You know.
No, I'm gonna have to sleep this one off, man. That's a tough pill to swallow, my friend.
I know. I was, when I heard it, I was crushed for you too. So on that note, now that I made Adam sad, I did enjoy our conversation. I hope you will come back. I hope that will not hinder you from coming back in the future.
Oh no, thank you very much, man. It was a pleasure to be on and talk some wrestling with you.
So there he was, the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, Adam Cole. He plays a jerk on television, but in every other facet, just a wonderful guy to deal with and a great person in general. Really nice guy.
Sounds like a good guy, man, and I hope you can introduce me to him when we go to the ROH event in Toronto.
Well, you are now committed, as we heard in that interview. You must go now.
You're going to have to drag me there, but I want to go see ROH live. I missed out last time. I'm not doing it twice.
Indeed, and it should be fun when they make their way here in the fall, and who knows where this company is at that point, as this is a big moment for them heading to pay-per-view June the 22nd. And we talked about it before the interview, the way this card is shaping up. I like this card for Ring of Honor. I really think it is a strong card and really could do some good things for them. It promoted right, which they are certainly doing. Adam Cole is doing a ton of press for this upcoming pay-per-view, and one of the guys, he's going to be, I think he was already on the show, but it's going to be on YouTube as well. he was on with Sam Roberts, who many people will know for his many wrestling interviews with a lot of the top guys in the WWE. So big things for Adam Cole, doing lots of media, and we were part of that junket of press that he is doing for this pay-per-view, and we wish him and the folks at Ring of Honor nothing but success.
And Cole, if you ever want to come back on the podcast, please let us know. We'd love to have you.
It's already happening.
It already is?
It's already happening. We have talked about when Ring of Honor is coming back to Toronto. We are looking forward to hopefully having Adam Cole rejoin us at that time. So it's in the works.
Oh, we're doing big things, buddy.
We're trying. You see, I'm happy that that's the case, because breaking the news to him about Ronda Rousey and her actually having a boyfriend, I thought it was curtains for us.
I was going to, oh man, make you tap out or something. I know he's a big Rousey guy.
Yeah, and I had assumed, we had taped that interview, obviously, previously, and I assumed he had known the news that Ronda had a boyfriend, but he, as we found out, did not. So he took that like the champ that he is, and great guy, as I said. Wish Adam Cole nothing but success, not only in his ROH career, but in his future. And as we talked about in that interview, the future of people that hold that title that he holds is a pretty good list of successful people in the wrestling business.
Hey, when you're the Ring of Honor World Champion, you go on to bigger and better things, and hopefully that's the case for Adam Cole, very talented guy.
And we make the transition. We also talk about the World Wrestling Entertainment Federation on this program as well. And their world champion, some mixed messages now with Daniel Bryan. I just read an article not that long ago, within the past 24 hours. The recovery for his neck surgery is not going as speedily as they had hoped. And now, big question on what is going to happen at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, if we actually are going to get a world title match with Daniel Bryan versus Kane in a stretcher match, or if the actual Money in the Bank match will be for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, I was reading similar articles. It looks like he's losing feeling in his arms, which is never a good thing, especially when you have neck issues like that. But it looks like WWE is kind of covering their bases at this point, saying, you know what, if he's healthy to go, we'll see him against Kane in the stretcher match. But unfortunately, if he can't compete, we're going to hang the belts above the ring, and we're going to have just a ladder match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And when I first heard that announcement, I was kind of like, you know, it's sad to say, but I was almost hoping that Bryan wouldn't compete, because the ladder match for the belt sounds a hell of a lot more exciting than a silly stretcher match.
Well, yeah, but when you look at the stretcher match, that's a match where if Daniel Bryan is not at 100% through the magic and smoke and mirrors of wrestling, you could very easily have him work a stretcher match not at 100% and be able to do that fairly easily, I would think. Well, maybe not easily. Easily, yeah, probably isn't the right word. But he would be able to get through it. And I think that's why we're getting the match that they have proposed, if Daniel Bryan is indeed able to go at Money in the Bank. We shall see.
Yeah, it's completely up in the air at this point, but good on WWE for at least having options moving forward. I mean, we both hope that Daniel Bryan is healthy. You know, neck injuries could be long-lasting, but at the same time, if it is as bad as it appears to be, he should stay on the shelf for a little while longer and preserve his long-term health.
Yeah, and we'll see how it works out. A much different situation for them than the situation that TNA finds themselves in, as their pay-per-view coming up, Slammiversary. All their shows have been taped, and news this week that MVP, who is supposed to be going for their world title, has a knee injury and may not be able to go at Slammiversary. So that's the issues you deal with when you have a taped television show.
Well, that's the thing with TNA. They could always throw somebody else in the mix or take another singles match. They actually have a pretty decent card. I think Samoa Joe and Bobby Lashley is booked. Kenny King, a former ROH guy, going up against Austin Aries. So, but yeah, if MVP can't compete, I'm sure they'll figure out something. But is this the only time we're going to talk about TNA on the podcast today?
Probably, but I felt I should mention it because it fit in with everything that was going on with the various champions. So Adam Cole, the most healthy ROH world champion of all the champions, and we wish him continued health as he will be battling actually on the weekend. He is actually defending that belt against Tommaso Ciampa, who he cut one heck of a promo on this whole idea of Adam Cole versus Michael Elgin and people discounting him. And I wrote an article about how WWE can kind of do different things with their title belts and on live events and stuff like that. And I added that promo by Tommaso because I thought it was just a great way of selling a live event for people because, you know, we become wrestling fans that we just assume at a live event that isn't on pay-per-view or television that titles aren't going to change hands and that kind of stuff isn't going to happen. But back in the day, it used to happen frequently. Well, maybe not frequently, but it happened on occasion. Bret Hart won his first world title against Ric Flair at a house show in Saskatoon. Diesel, Kevin Nash won the world title against Bob Backlund at an MSG house show. And I think when you have that happen every once in a while, it's great for your live event business if you're the WWE or any other company.
But you see, what WWE does now is that they always tease title changes. Like, I think it was just recently when they did their European tour, they had Harper and Rowan defeat the Usos for the tag team titles, but then they immediately reversed the decision. And they've done that quite a bit. I think they did that with Swagger and the Intercontinental Championship. It would be nice to see them actually make a significant title change at a house show. It would bring more people in the future because that would say, you know what, you never know what you're going to get at one of these events.
And in the world we live in, it's not like those old days with Bret Hart or Diesel. The internet buzz that would come from a WWE title changing hands at a house show would be huge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, every wrestling website would go nuts and would be posting about it, and you would have so much buzz on the internet about a title changing hands that it might be something worth doing or considering if you're the WWE.
That would be so out of left field, and hell, I'd give WWE a heck of a lot of credit if they pulled it off, but I doubt that'll happen anytime soon.
Even having, you know, matches on television where belts change hands, we don't see that enough even anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Raw and SmackDown, it's been a while since we saw a title change. I think it was probably just like for the IC or United States Championship or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, Bad News Barrett won that Battle Royal with Dean Ambrose, so there was that.
Oh, you mean Sheamus won the
Sheamus, yeah.
Yeah.
Sheamus, Bad News Barrett. They're both from over there in Europe. I'm sure everyone got the gist of that.
It's literally the same guy, let's be honest.
No, not really. Not at all. But anyway, so that's thoughts on that. And we covered Daniel Bryan. One of the things that I wrote about that's actually doing fairly well on Condo on the Moon, we have seen the last of Batista before we get into how Raw finished with one of the more memorable finishes to a Raw in many years. Let's look back on the run that was Batista, and it was not a great run for Batista in the WWE this time around, and I've talked about it on this program. It wouldn't shock me if he doesn't come back.
It probably wasn't the run that he was envisioning for himself, because fans turned on him almost immediately ever since he appeared on Raw in those skinny jeans and his white zip-up coat. But looking back on his, you know, pay-per-view run, he won the Royal Rumble. He beat Alberto Del Rio at the Elimination Chamber. Had a heck of a triple threat match at WrestleMania that Daniel Bryan eventually won. And he put over the Shield twice at Extreme Rules and Payback. So he did his job. He got a paycheck, hopefully. And now he's going to go off and do his Guardians of the Galaxy shtick.
But I think when we look back on it, the WWE really failed Batista in this. Because I think they promoted him like he was an A-level star, and he really wasn't in the minds of fans. Add in the momentum that Daniel Bryan had. Now, granted, at the time they made this deal with Batista, we were in the early stages of Daniel Bryan, and I'm sure the WWE thought that whole momentum Bryan had would fade away, but it did not. And you factor in all those things, and then ultimately, people say, oh, well, Batista ended out in a high as part of Evolution and being part of those great matches with the Shield. But I thought that's how Batista used to always get over before, being booked with wrestlers that, quite frankly, with all due respect to Dave Batista, are all better than him and made him look better as a result.
Well, that's the thing with Batista. I think, you know, WWE had him on this pedestal, and the fact that his return to the company got leaked also derailed his momentum. If he had showed up at the Royal Rumble as a surprise entrant, it would have gone over a lot better, and he wouldn't have gotten booed out of Pittsburgh the way he was when he actually won the thing. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, when he was eventually put back into Evolution, he was kind of just an afterthought. It was all about Triple H, and then even a little more so about Randy Orton. But now, you know, you said he might not never come back. I actually agree with you. There's not really much else he could do at this point if he were to return.
Not to mention there were promises made about having the world title, which I don't think mattered, Dave, but also money promises that I don't think the WWE delivered on, and that is a big deal. And I mean, that's a problem. There's lots of interesting things going on with the WWE in terms of financial stuff and money talk. And actually, before we get to that Raw and how it finished with the Shield and Evolution, I wanted to touch on this subject as well. Rey Mysterio has had his contract run out with WWE, but the WWE has rolled it over, claiming that because of all the injuries Rey Mysterio's had, he owes them a year on his contract. Word has it, Rey Mysterio might be actually thinking about challenging this legally, and honestly, I think he should, because I think that's total BS.
Yeah, is that even legal, where you could actually just say, hey, you've missed so many dates, now that your contract has expired, we want you to make up those dates because you were on the show? Like, I don't get that.
And that's the thing. That's why if there is a legal case, we're going to find out if that's legal or not. And I'm not exactly sure if it is. And boy, oh boy, it also leads to another interesting question of, if this is the case, what does that mean when CM Punk's deal comes up at the end of July or whenever that actually occurs? Because they could technically make the same claim against CM Punk, I would imagine.
Yeah, they could, but I mean, we heard at Payback when Stephanie McMahon was in the ring, she's not too fond of CM Punk at the moment, and it looks like Triple H isn't either. So at this point, they could care less about anything that has to do with Phil Brooks. The further he is away from the company, the better.
But, I mean, they want to. It's not about if they like someone or they don't like someone. It's about protecting themselves from him going elsewhere. And, you know, who's to say if he would do that? But, for example, I mean, he has ties to Ring of Honor. Who's to say that CM Punk wouldn't, for a one-off, show up on a Ring of Honor show? If they fight him contractually, he can't do that.
Yeah, I understand, but at the same time, it's like, okay, we've heard reports that maybe even Vince McMahon is like the only one who really has any investment or invested time in bringing Punk back, because he could make the WWE money. But if he were to go to Ring of Honor and do a one-off show, like you said, would that really affect WWE? It wouldn't even leave a blimp on their radar.
No, but I think it makes Ring of Honor stronger, and it makes competition stronger. And if you're the WWE, why on earth would you want that?
Yeah, but Ring of Honor is never going to be even in WWE's league. And I say that with all due respect. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, no, it's true, but I just think, you know, the fact that WWE could hold this control over the wrestling future of guys like Rey Mysterio, like CM Punk, is in their best interest, and, you know, it's going to take someone to actually fight them on it for it not to be the case. And it's just a number of backstories that are going on in the WWE right now that are very interesting, and we'll see how it all plays out. But obviously a lot of drama going on behind the scenes, which I guess is nothing new in world wrestling entertainment.
It's a convoluted mess at this point. I mean, it's a lot of crazy stuff is going on. Rey Mysterio, CM Punk, but With the way that Raw ended last week, we have some hope for the future that things might be turning around, at least from a storyline perspective.
Yeah, we actually have some drama and excitement going on in the ring. We mentioned how Dave Batista is no longer part of Evolution. That, of course, happened because he quit the promotion and evolution at the beginning of Raw. Probably the best part of Dave Bautista's run, the queen-like wave when he left, I thought was tremendous.
You trolled the fans hard on that one. I loved it. I almost forgot about that.
Yes, the queen wave. Someone called it something else online I saw. No, that is the wave of the queen. I am very well aware of it. So that being said, Batista was out. It looked like it was 3-on-2. You had the Shield versus Triple H and his lackey slash buddy Randy Orton. But as the worm turned, that would not be the case, as Seth Rollins laid waste to his Shield members when Triple H came out with the sledgehammer and Randy Orton in tow, and Seth Rollins left people with their mouths wide open. That was one of those Raw moments that are, you know, iconic in some senses, because no one saw this coming. If you had any member of the Shield that was going to turn on them, Seth Rollins was 3 out of 3. He was the last guy that people would expect. And I thought it came off brilliantly.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked too, but they almost kind of gave it away when Rollins went ringside and he grabbed that steel chair. And I think I even called it on Twitter, and I said it earlier in the day, I felt like this was a good time to break up the Shield. They had just defeated Evolution twice on pay-per-view, and there's really nobody else, especially with Batista leaving. Evolution was kind of, you know, cut in half at that point. Who else could you throw in the Shield's way? And they did it perfectly. I mean, no one saw Rollins turning. I felt it was going to be Ambrose as well, because he's a natural heel. But give it up to Rollins. He could probably pull this off. It's such a huge coup for his career.
And now there's lots of debate on where this goes from here and the follow-up from here. We'll get into that in just a second. But one last point on this. If you think about this, it does make sense, because Seth Rollins was the one guy that was picked to be the first ever NXT champion. And when you think about NXT, the guy who pulls the trigger and makes the decisions at NXT is, of course, Triple H. So obviously, he has always seen a bright future for Seth Rollins. And by bringing him a part of his group in the main storyline, that obviously cements how much he does believe in Seth Rollins legitimately, not just in storyline.
Yeah, Seth Rollins, heck of a talent. It looks like he's going to be an Evolution. It doesn't appear that he's just going to be a bad guy and he turned his back on Ambrose and Reigns. But yeah, he's going to do something later tonight on Friday Night SmackDown. He's apparently going to talk to the WWE Universe and give some sort of a background on why he pulled it off. But yeah, it leaves for some compelling television, and I can't wait to tune in tonight, and I can't wait to tune in on Monday.
Yeah, I think we'll get more of an explanation on Monday than you'll actually get on Friday Night SmackDown, which is no surprise, because SmackDown seldom breaks news these days.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to save the juicy bits for Raw.
Indeed. And then I mentioned where the storyline goes from here. A lot of people are talking about this idea of having a third member of the Shield, like a new member. I don't think this is the direction we go, and I don't think it is the direction that they should go.
Yeah, I think that's it for the Shield. What I was calling for at Money in the Bank, the next pay-per-view later this month, two pay-per-views in one month, go figure. We're probably going to get a tag team match of some sort. It wouldn't surprise me to see Reigns and Ambrose versus Rollins and Orton.
And I think down the line, Seth Rollins was obviously the guy who turned, but who's to say that Dean Ambrose can't turn as well, and it is kind of Roman Reigns on his own trying to fight his way through everybody to get to Triple H. I think that's a pretty good storyline.
Yeah, that's a good idea, man, because at this point, you know, Reigns is obviously going to branch off and do his thing with Triple H heading into SummerSlam. Where does that leave Dean Ambrose? And at least, hopefully, I hope at one point we get a one-on-one match between Ambrose and Rollins, because I've always looked back at some of their stuff from their FCW days down in NXT. There's some of their matches for the FCW 15 championship were out of this world. They had 30-minute Iron Man match, which is a classic. I really hope they can bring that kind of action over to the main roster.
There's actually a triple threat match between all three members of the Shield that is fantastic as well. If you can find it on YouTube, go search it out. It is a pretty good match to have a look at. But all three of these guys, I have no doubt that all three of them are going to be successful. And I think as individuals, they can all find their way and cut their niche. And I think I mentioned on this podcast before, I think this will always be something that the WWE will draw back on, both for rivalries and coming back together. I think it'll be much like, you know, factions we've seen, like how they brought Evolution back together, like we've seen DX come back together many times over. I think the Shield will always be a part of the story that will be touched on at various points throughout probably, what, the next decade? All these guys should be around for the next 10 years. I see no reason why they wouldn't be.
Well, there's money in the Shield, and we saw that. I mean, they were teasing a breakup months ago when there was dissension between Ambrose and Reigns, and Rollins was walking out on them during matches. So somewhere down the line, once these guys have all prospered as singles competitors, we will see a Shield reunion, no doubt about it.
Yeah, let's face it. I mean, if CM Punk doesn't leave this company, the plan was, by most accounts, that it was going to be all three members of the Shield in a triple threat for the U.S. title. And then when CM Punk left, plans, and they changed things with Daniel Bryan, everything for that WrestleMania card kind of got thrown up in the air.
And now that they defeated Evolution twice on pay-per-view, especially at Payback, they swept them out of the building. There's even more money in the Shield. So now it's going to be even more exciting. We're going to see what they can do by themselves, at least for the time being. I mean, Ambrose and Reigns might do their little alliance for a bit, but yeah, I can't wait, man. This is long overdue.
And the one guy, if there's anyone I'm concerned for, and I don't know how concerned I am for him, but Randy Orton coming out of this, where the heck does he go after all this is done? Because he has just been such a non-factor in everything.
Yeah, even now in Evolution, it looks like Rollins is going to overshadow him too. He's going to play third fiddle. I don't know what his standing was with Batista. It was kind of like 2A, 2B at that point, but yeah, this guy was the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, the first of the kind, you know? And now it's like, okay, what do you do anymore? It's kind of like drawn out. He's bland, and he's not as important as he used to be.
But as an in-ring performer, I mean, people may not like Randy Orton, but as an in-ring performer, he's money. Like, you throw him in a match, it'll be a good match.
Oh, yeah, he's still a main event level guy. It's just at this point, do fans, they're just kind of growing tired of his act, you know? And now that Seth Rollins is in Evolution, it'll bring some fresh blood into the picture. But there's no doubt that Rollins is more important than Orton at this point.
No, there's no doubt about that. But I'm just saying, like, Randy Orton, the in-ring talent, there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And so we will see how it all plays out, and obviously interesting things going on, and, you know, Ring of Honor is heading towards Best in the World. I wanted to say we had someone lined up and set up for next week. We're working on it. So I don't have any announcements for you, but next week hopefully we will have another stellar guest. They will have big shoes to fill following the ROH World Heavyweight Champion, but we'll find someone. There's someone out there that can do that, I'm sure, as we go along the path to Best in the World, promoting ROH and their debut on live pay-per-view June 22nd. Obviously, that's going to be available here in Canada and in the United States, so contact your local cable provider to see if you can get it in your area, and if you can't, they're still going to have it on iPay-per-view, so you can get it through Ustream and all of that.
One way or the other, you got to order that pay-per-view.
And with WWE, we wait and see what becomes of the future for the World Heavyweight Championship, the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, and not sure what's going to happen there. Daniel Bryan is booked to be on Raw this week to confront one Stephanie McMahon, so we'll see what happens there.
Ooh, haven't seen that before. Another Daniel Bryan and Stephanie McMahon segment, but I guess we're going to have to get some more clarification on his injury and what lies ahead at Money in the Bank.
Although, I mean, I do enjoy Stephanie's segments. I think they're tremendous.
I mean, I'm kind of on the fence with her.
What is wrong with Stephanie McMahon?
I mean, she's a good heel and all. It just kind of grates on me after a while. I mean, lovely lady, I'm sure. But, man, she can really it's like a nail is going down a chalkboard. It gets to you, man. It gets to you.
Well, if we ever get Stephanie McMahon for the program, I will be sure to make sure you're not on it. How about that?
Yeah, they call it. go for it, man. Just keep me away. It's fine. I've dug my own grave at this point.
If we were to get someone like that, that would be huge.
That would be pretty damn big, man. I mean, with all we love Adam Cole, Stephanie McMahon. I mean, she, you know, in charge of WWE.
She's Stephanie McMahon. Are we going to get the match, her and Brie Bella?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Somewhere down the road.
I think we almost have to at this point because we've just booked it to be that. Although, if we're not, then why did they do what they did? That would be my question.
Exactly. And Stephanie McMahon, there's been those muscle and fitness pictures of her coming out. She's in tremendous shape, and she could have a half-decent match with Brie Bella. And with all of this stuff, the slap in the face at Payback, it's inevitable.
She's actually been training, like, MMA stuff. So, I mean, Stephanie McMahon is more of an accomplished in-ring competitor, I would think, than when she had her run in her younger days as the women's champion. So,
do you think we get this match at least by SummerSlam?
I think at SummerSlam is the place to have it.
Yeah, it sounds about right to me. It's the second biggest event of the year. Actually, I mean, we've discussed this too, when the WWE Network subscriptions run out, I mean, they're going to start booking Night of Champions as maybe their number two pay-per-view of the year. But SummerSlam, perfect place to have such a match.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, and we'll see what happens. And again, thanks a lot to Adam Cole. He was a great guest, and we appreciate him stopping by in the program. And if you're new to the program and you came to hear Adam Cole, we thank you for listening. We hope you'll come back. We're here every Friday, and we're doing this thing talking about all that's going on in the world of wrestling. We tend to focus on WWE and Ring of Honor, and we try and do a good job each and every week to make it entertaining for you. And I almost forgot, Chris Walder, the big news this week. We are now a .com. So just
we're a .com!
So simply, condoonthemoon.com, and bam, the website pops up. You are there for this podcast, for all the great articles that are written throughout the week, and it's all there. That's all you have to remember, condoonthemoon.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at the same handle, @condoonthemoon, and we'll get you all hooked up and give you great wrestling information both through this podcast and through our great articles, and that's basically all I have left to say.
That's what you got to plug, Condom on the Moon, man. Bigger and better every single week. Podcasts are getting better. Again, we thank Adam Cole for joining us, and we hope to have him back really, really soon, hopefully around the next Toronto event.
Yeah, sometime in August, and actually our guest from last week, Matt Taven, has agreed to do the very same. So we'll be cranking this up again in August and getting you ready for the show in Toronto for Ring of Honor, as that promotion, as Adam Cole said, has been having a tremendous 2014. I expect that to continue because, quite frankly, they're doing just a bang-up job.
That's why we promote the hell out of Ring of Honor, man. It's such a great company. The matches are perfect, like near perfect. I mean, the best in-ring action you'll see anywhere, even better than WWE, in my opinion. So can't wait to go to the event in Toronto this fall. And can't wait to meet Adam Cole in person. Like you said, I'm holding you to this, buddy. You're going to introduce me.
I will. If there's an opportunity to do so, I will most indeed introduce you to Adam Cole, the ROH World Heavyweight Champion. He may not be come September, but we hope he is because he's a pretty good guy.
Absolutely.
All right, then. On that note, we thank you for tuning in to Condo on the Moon, and we appreciate you if you've supported us in the past or if you're just finding us. We appreciate and love all of you and hope you find this program to your liking. We're working hard to make it a good show that you can be proud to tell your friends you listen to.
The cream of the crop! Nobody does it better. More questions!
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye!